Welcome to The Choice, Episode 15, Whiteness Conspiracy Theory, The Economics of Whiteness, Part 3, White Privilege versus White Warranty. I'm Kurt Doolittle. This podcast includes a collaboration of content produced over the number of years between Eli Harmon and Kurt Doolittle on the economics of white privilege. Privilege versus warranty. White privilege is an intentional misrepresentation of and a misnomer for white warranty. The individual and collectively the group warrants and polices a standard of behavior and mores among our own. Self-enforcement and punishment ensue as the group tries to maintain that warranty and succeeds. The cost of white privilege. White privilege is white reputation, earned by white warranty of themselves and others' behavior as being trustworthy by the non-imposition of costs upon the personal, private, common interests of others in display, word, or deed. And we do that by continuous suppression of opportunities for self-interest by ourselves, on others, and the members of our group. So whenever we mention white privilege, we mean white reputation that's earned by the evidence of continuous policing of self and others that those who claim is a privilege rather than inheritance that we keep maintaining the costly value of, and that others don't equally pay for by self-regulation, family regulation, group behavioral regulation, so that they have equal reputation or better. White reputation, fraudulently called white privilege, is earned every single day by every white person who doesn't harm that reputation. And we know full well that the differences between races are not just surface, but deep differences in self-control, in cognitive and emotional ability, and in the subcultural and cultural differences that result from those deep differences in self-control, cognitive and emotional ability. And we know why those group differences exist. There are different degrees of evolution of groups within the past 50,000 years, and in particular, the failure of most groups to suppress underclass reproduction so they can use surpluses to improve the commons for all. So white privilege is just a racist hate label for a white reputation earned by continuous payment of the high cost of white warranty. I pay to maintain it so that I might pass it on to the next generation as it was passed on to me. Any privilege can be abused. So, for example, every time I go into a store and I'm not followed around by security, I'm given the opportunity to steal. Foregoing those opportunities is the opportunity cost that maintaining such privileges for myself and others like me requires. So privilege, like any norm, is a commons. White people aren't granted privilege. They pay for their reputation as trustworthy every single day. Because white people can create and maintain commons and other people cannot. In other words, the privilege is a dividend on a cost we bear to invest in the commons of not being suspicious by continuously policing ourselves and our own so that we preserve that advantage. The origins of white privilege. White privileges and its precursor, racism, have been used as weapons to create a burden of debt upon white people and a claim of entitlement for non-white people. That constitutes a real non-white theft by fraud, extracted from white people through systemic anti-white racism. In other words, creating the opposite social construction of a norm of an implied debt that doesn't exist because non-whites don't pay equally for that trust, that reputation. We are able to transfer from person to person, group to group, and from generation to generation. Whites are amply warranted, therefore, in shrugging off the non-white burden and should be allowed to remain, criticizing them for the thefts they enjoy, on account of complicity with systemic institutional fraud, aggression, demoralization, manipulation, and culture war directed against whites, for which whites must be suitably and perpetually contrite and penitent, despite all the benefits that they enjoyed at white people's expense, but have not previously been made to reciprocate, and as such they have stolen and for which owe us restitution. the economics of white privilege. Critics note that white privilege is unearned and conclude that it's therefore undeserved. But we all pay for our white privilege. We all pay for it by the warranty and insurance of preservation of the decrease in opportunity costs created by our collective behavior. So when it's extended to me by not abusing it, in other words, if I'm not followed around by security, I'm being given an opportunity to steal. To maintain that privilege of not being followed by security for myself and others, I have to pay the opportunity cost of foregoing those opportunities to steal. Evidence suggests that enough white people are willing to pay for this privilege in this way to maintain it across the population through generations, and we earn that reputation throughout the world. Some groups aren't willing to forego opportunities to steal reliably enough to make the privilege of not being followed around by security worth giving to them. By whining about white people getting this privilege or saying it's unfair, they're trying to obtain an equal warranty, an equal privilege at a discount. In other words, they're trying to obtain the benefits of whiteness without paying the cost of whiteness. The demand is basically that whites conduct all business and interaction with non-whites on our white in-group terms, except that other people don't pay the costs of whiteness. So it's not worthwhile if they're not in-group. They don't treat us as in-group, and by the standards we demand of in-group members. And furthermore, they resist our policing of their groups so that they meet the standards and such can earn the same returns. In other words, they're parasites. The only way to be uniform and fair, as these parasites define fairness, would be to conduct business and interactions with everyone, even fellow whites, on the low-trust out-group terms and have security follow everyone. But this isn't optimal. It's costlier for our in-group members. In other words, why should we pay for the norm of high trust and lose the returns of high trust because other people fail to conform to the behavior policing themselves and members of their group with equal insurance so that they also develop the norm of high trust behavior? If I say I didn't earn my white privilege, I'm not sure that's true, but I do pay for it. Every time I'm extended it and I don't abuse it, such as when I'm not followed by security and nevertheless refrain from stealing, you know, the payment of that opportunity cost is what maintains that privilege, that gain, that benefit for myself and others like me. Are all whites trustworthy and all non-whites untrustworthy? Well, certainly not, but it certainly pays to employ different risk management strategies with different groups according to the statistical risks that each of those groups represent. I mean, stereotypes are the most accurate measure in society. Social science has no better measure than stereotypes because they're empirically confirmed or falsified every single day. So accordingly, different outgroups develop different terms. Asians get better outgroup terms in white societies than blacks, and whites get better outgroup terms in Asian societies than blacks, even if none get in-group terms, because whites and Asians are lower risk and higher benefit relative to blacks. It's not just in-group versus out-group. It's the reputation that a group develops by self-policing and self-policing members of the group to earn the same privileges and rights and returns as people who do police their groups. There are two kinds of blacks who object to being mistrusted: the untrustworthy, because it makes it harder to abuse trust, and the trustworthy, for whom it's costly and embarrassing to be lumped with the untrustworthy. But we can't tell the difference. Demanding not to be lumped in is unreasonable. The only way to do that is for the people who are trustworthy to equally police their own with equal severity so that the privileges of being trustworthy are earned for the entire group. Otherwise, we must, out of logical necessity, police everyone within that group for their failure to police their untrustworthy members. So that's the cost you pay if you don't police your own. Blacks are just one group. We pick them out because they're the most obvious criminal group. But there are other groups, and we talk about them frequently, that conduct different types of crime. Certainly financial crime and propaganda crime and crime of undermining the society are equally criminal. So there are three main honest, productive ways to minimize the cost of being associated with an untrustworthy group. You can signal with speech, dress, mannerisms, etc. to distinguish and differentiate yourself from that group. Secondly, you could offer more positive value. Third, you could suppress the parasitism of your own group. The Asians could suppress the fact that they are the most pervasive tax cheats in America at the small business scale. Don't demand in-group terms from out-groups. It's never worthwhile to extend you those terms, and those demands are always dishonest and parasitic. But by employing the methods above, you can obtain better out-group terms from others for your group. Finally, it's worth mentioning that in-groups and out-group are generally defined according to kinship, because closer kinship makes trust and altruism, the mechanics of in-group privilege, evolutionarily self-enforcing, and they reward and propagate other instances of your genes. Conversely, kinship also makes defection, non-performance, and irreciprocity, meaning the basic mechanisms of out-group parasitism, evolutionarily unstable and self-punishing. They punish and therefore diminish and handicap other instances of your own genes. This is why in-group is always kin-group and all groups are ethnocentric and racist. It's behavioral economics. It can't be otherwise. The only time it doesn't function that way is for people on the extreme margins. The economics of association in heterogeneous polities. It's because ethnic Europeans, particularly Northern Europeans, largely because of geography and culture, came out of the Dark Ages first, had the Enlightenment first, developed the first fully middle-class civilization first, and did so genetically, culturally, and institutionally by using militias due to weak central governments and really geography, by individual sovereignty because of militias, rule of law, not rule of discretion, and manorialism's suppression of underclass rates of reproduction, and by aggressive hanging of criminal populations for 1,000 years, and as a consequence, producing the highest trust society with the highest trust population and the best genetic distribution. So, in commerce and politics, ethnic Europeans have obtained a premium for their earned reputation for relative trustworthiness and work ethic, meaning both of which are middle-class public behaviors, and they preserve the premium through the intergenerational transfer of those habits, norms, traditions, and values. The problem is that high trust polities and deserved reputation for high trust is extremely expensive, and no other people so far have been able to produce it except possibly the Japanese and Koreans, who we have an affinity for. This is the reason for the West's higher standard of living, is the higher the trust, the higher the economic velocity, because the lower the transaction costs and the lower the opportunity costs. The rest is due to demographic distributions, meaning that the vast majority of ethnic Europeans are within one degree of the genetic middle class, meaning that they can learn to use technology independently by reading. Whereas the vast majority of people who complain about the reputation advantage of ethnic Europeans are from groups with historically larger underclasses and therefore lower medians of behavior, lower median genetic distributions, where the cultural norms are determined by that medium, and we're all judged by the averages or medium of our group. Why? Because, again, stereotypes are the most accurate measurement in the social sciences. The median of the group causes normative behavior, and groups who demonstrate normative behavior either succeed in or fail to police the behavior of their undesirables or underclasses that fail to adhere to the high trust ethics of a high trust polity. So stereotypes, again, are verified or falsified every single day in every personal interaction. That's why people are what they are, because stereotypes are true. Are they true at the individual level? No. A class, in other words, a group, is judged by the properties of its members. An individual may or may not be judged by the properties of its class. However, since groups tend to behave together and pursue kinship and advantages together and try to use political pressure together, and they vote together, live together, work together, and socialize together, then they do produce and distribute and demonstrate their group behavior, in fact, as a group. We're all punished for, we experience discounts for, and privileged for, experience premiums for, our identities. Our identities are the set of manners, ethics, morals, habits, body language, hygiene, dress, speech pattern, vocabulary, fitness, and everything else. So to lose your discount or to gain a premium, you need to change your group's sexual, social, economic, intellectual market value by changing your group's demographics, habits, manners, ethics, morals, traditions, values, and rituals so that they are also middle class market rather than whatever tradition you come from. It's not complicated. Before the 1965 Immigration Act, everyone who came to America was indoctrinated into it. It was only the post-war movement, the Jewish post-war movement, to open up our doors, to reverse our eugenic policies, and to take out their frustration on the Russians and the Germans who had justly punished the Jews. They came here to reverse those policies and took it out on our people, thus reversing the long history of eugenic Western civilization. The lesson is that people aren't scarce. Individuals aren't special. Humans are, by and large, a commodity. There are, if anything, far too many of us. People must work hard to find some way of providing value to others so that they are useful in the marketplace for sexual, social, economic, and political cooperation by which we survive. Because value is rare and people are not scarce, all people are careful in making the best investments they can, and they invest in what they can see. Hence why the Jews and Asians do better than ethnic Europeans in university acceptance, but no one criticizes them, while whites are criticized daily and experience reverse discrimination in academy, politics, the media, while preserving their economic advantage in the workplace and their relative social status, because we're more trustworthy. So it's not a privilege, it's a cultural premium for 1400 years of suppression of reproduction of the underclass and downward expansion of the middle class and training our children to do what is uncomfortable in order to obtain the long-term benefits of conforming to middle class behaviors. It's also impossible to alter for that reason. People from other cultures or ethnicities assume white identity is arbitrary, but it's merely the universal adoption of middle class market behavior on a civilizational scale where universal middle class market behavior is simply conformity to the formal physical, behavioral, and evolutionary laws of the universe, which allows us to compete faster because we're more truthful and less divergent from the laws of the universe. So you can join the middle class by acting as middle class and getting others with your identity to act middle class. It's not complicated, but it's terribly difficult, which is why so few cultures can do it without many generations of middle class civilization. The flip side of colonialism, industrial production of prosperity. Quote, colonialism was a profound, if not most profound, good since the invention of farming. We dragged mankind out of ignorance, superstition, poverty, hard labor, disease, child mortality, early death, suffering, tyranny, subjectivity to the vicissitudes of nature, and we were kicking and screaming the whole time. The Western failure was only having the European and civil wars to contain Germany and contain Russia and leaving our project of dragging mankind out of ignorance and poverty incomplete. We switched from being able to do it by direct governance and rule to having to do it by information distribution and economic persuasion. That failure led to the only significant problems of colonialism: the failure to complete the replacement of French despotism with English developmentalism, the absence of the technology of fiat money credit that would have eliminated the need for gold and resource extraction, the collapse left an opening for the counter-revolutions of French socialism, Jewish communism, and Islamic fundamentalism, the introduction of medicines and health science without the introduction of eugenics and birth control, the failure of our post-war investments in the Third World, which were too insubstantial to do other than delay or inhibit internal growth of demand. Quote, slavery was universal and whites were more frequently the subject of it, especially by Muslims, than perpetrators of it. The vast majority of slaves went to the Caribbean and South America. Only a 500,000 slaves come to America, as far as I know, and blacks will very shortly have killed more of their own than came over in slave ships. Why? Whites are not malarial immune, but many blacks are. Whites have a higher, hotter metabolism, and blacks don't. Whites tend to be taken from the criminal impoverished classes and died in droves. Africans were captured by other Africans as prisoners of war in order to attempt to unify West Africa and complete the production of the West African Empire, which would have happened had the Brits not intervened. Anglos were wrong as usual, were too utopian. This meant that the warm weather colonies were most able to produce high value goods, particularly sugar, with Africans. They had more survivors. They spread genes of previously constrained people to new territories. They forcibly modernized both cultures, civilizations, and genes. And it was not known that enslaved primitives were capable of civilized behavior at the time. And it's becoming questionable again. It was only in the 19th century, after the Industrial Revolution, we found that citizens were more profitable than serfs and were more profitable than slaves. Creating middle classes by resource exploitation and sending manufactured or value-added goods to developing people was just the only means possible of dragging the vast body of dirty, ignorant, superstitious, violent, poor, disease-ridden, undomesticated animal humans out of their condition and reforming their societies incrementally until they themselves could create a middle-class civilization capable of self-governance without threat to the more advanced civilizations they were surrounded by or interacted with. The West was punished in the ancient world for truth, reason, law, and technology, and punished in the current world the same. We dragged mankind kicking and screaming out of ignorance, superstition, poverty, hard labor, starvation, disease in the ancient world and in the modern, and in both eras, the ungrateful people rebelled like the children that they are. Why? Because Western truth forces you to face your sexual, social, economic, and political value and recognize that in a world of the great benefits of international trade, you compete in international markets. Therefore, your illusion of your worth is dispelled. Why? Because that is what it means to be Western, truth regardless of consequence to the status hierarchy. And that's the real problem. The rejecting to the truth provided by the market for their sexual, social, economic, and political value. And they're failing to implement eugenic and behavioral suppression so that they can join the modern world. This is Kurt Doolittle for The Choice. Thank you for listening.